Silencing a hostile crowd, the Dons won 3-1 at Newcastle to advance in the FA Cup to the FA Cup quarter-final. "We want to win the cup," Laurie Sanchez explained. "If you went by what you read in the papers at the start of the season, there would have been little point in us even turning up for these matches. According to some, we're already relegated. They seem to forget that we do not throw in the towel at Wimbledon. We do not throw in the towel at Wimbledon, and we still don't. We're the same old Wombles. We're back."
Might not be life or death, my friend, but to me, it's more important than that.
Hello, welcome, dear listener, to the Same Old Wombles podcast. Today, I'm very excited. I'm joined by my friend, Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall.
Hi, Matty.
I always catch him off guard. He's never paying attention. He's usually doing some work. Producer Adam Proctor. Oh, Adam.
Good evening, all.
Our football guru expert, Mark Lewis. All right, Mark.
Good evening. Good evening. Welcome, all.
And
welcome
our
to our guest.
Our special guest, Steve Mumford. Hello, Steve. Steve, former youth team goalkeeper. And I'm right. I'm going to give this to you, whether you like it or not. Understudy to Hans Seegers.
I would say in training, yes. I never quite made the bench, but I've got a story about that actually later. If you want to ask me that, I thought I was making the bench.
Oh but, no, we've got to go straight into it. What happened?
So I was at the training ground and told to get my kit and get over to Sellers ASAP, and I thought Sully must be injured or something, so I'm going to be on the bench. And I got over there, got changed in the dressing room, and then I was told I'm going to do the half-time penalty shootout with the cast of the Bill. So yeah, that was as close as I got to being Hans's understudy, I think. But yeah, it happened.
Oh mate,
did you go asking what happened in the penalty shootout?
Reg Hollis scored against me. But no, it was good. I made a couple of saves, you know, you can't save them all, but I definitely saved a few. So yeah, that was against Chelsea in, I think, 94-95. But I genuinely did think I was on the bench that game, and I think I was 17 at the time, and yeah, slightly disappointed, but still got to perform in front of all the fans. So yeah, really good.
Oh. So how did you start? How did you get involved in Wimbledon? What was your story?
I grew up in Range Park and played for Merton, and got scouted by Wimbledon at 11, and basically played for Wimbledon all the way through till I was 16 and got offered my apprenticeship. And I was pretty much one of the only local guys in that particular team. Jason Yule was a Londoner as well. He was in the team. But yeah, from 11, basically, joined up, and that was it. I was there for many years until, you know, in my apprenticeship, I got quite a bad shoulder injury and missed 3 months and didn't quite get there. But had some unbelievable games and times along the way, and played for the reserves quite a few times, and you know, had some brilliant times. So yeah. But yeah, I was from SW20, and parents were from SW18, and sort of met in the middle in SW19. Yeah,
hey, that's incredible! What an incredible time you had. So you were with us for what?
Oh,
just under 10 years, something like that.
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, it was unbelievable. From the moment I joined, you mentioned the Grimsby game there. They really looked after us at Wimbledon. So I signed as a 11-year-old just after we'd won the FA Cup. And, you know, straight away they allow you to be ball boy. Then they took us on a trip to America. We did a sponsored run round Plough Lane in 1990, and it raised funds for us to go on a trip with Caroline Brewer. Do you remember Caroline? the physio. So
yes,
it was only really myself, Jason Yule would be probably one of the only names you'd know, but we went on a great trip to Philadelphia, and we were beating all the under 17, under 18 sides, and we were kind of, what was I, 13 years old. So yeah, it was brilliant. So we went out there and represented Wimbledon, and I still keep in touch with quite a few of the guys that went out there. We were we're all on WhatsApp groups and stuff. So yeah, but they looked after us is what I'm trying to say. They really did. And you know, from 11 all the way up till my apprenticeship, they thoroughly looked after us. They always had our best interests at heart at Wimbledon, and that's something I'll always sort of hold quite dear. I had a lot of friends that played for Palace, for Tottenham, for Chelsea, and I felt loved at Wimbledon. You know, even the day I got released, I felt absolutely loved there, and felt like I was part of something. You know, so yeah.
And so when you first joined, Hans would have been our number one keeper.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I think Simon Tracy started the season, and I kind of joined just as Hans made his debut. I think I missed his debut against Everton, but I was kind of ball boy behind his goal pretty much every home game, and I was just watching his techniques. His kicking was unbelievable. You all remember how he pings the ball. And, you know, I basically just watched him and emulated everything he did. And you know, it wasn't until I became an apprentice that I actually met him, and I was training with him and Sully on a daily basis, obviously, and Sully broke his leg quite early on, so I was training with the first team most days, you know. But he taught me day one, he taught me something. I thought I was kind of the best goalkeeper. I thought I was probably sort of up there ready to play for England. As you got to be as a goalkeeper, you got to be confident. And I thought I knew it all, and Hans basically smashed a few balls at me, and they weren't sticking to me. And you know how great Hans's hands are. And he just taught me how to breathe when I'm keeping goal. He actually taught me to breathe out and over-exaggerate that exhale as the ball's coming at you. And it was like a light bulb moment. And from that moment on, I felt like my handling just improved massively. And that was kind of pretty much day one, training session one with Hans. That was my first experience with Hans. But funnily enough, I'm still in touch with him sort of now, because my coaching company, he does a bit of work for them in the summer. So I was on a summer camp with him, and it's quite surreal, sort of a 30-year cycle since I'd seen him. So, yeah.
That is incredible. And even at that age, you were training with the first team. What was that like?
Well, it was seriously day one of my apprenticeship. We did the photo shoot, and you'll always remember the Ribeiro kit with the LBC. So that was an unbelievable day. A lot of my school friends came up because it was just up the A3 from my high school, and we did the photo shoot. And then, literally, first team needed me over training. I think Sully was injured a fair amount during that period, so they always needed a goalkeeper basically in training. So I went over, and I was literally training with Fash and Vinnie Jones and all the guys, John Scales. So you're straight in it. And I didn't really feel out of my league at the time. It was just, it was slightly different. You know, the I remember Dean Holdsworth, the finishing was unbelievable. He had no backlift on his shot at all. And you're normally looking for a bit of backlift to sort of read where they're going to put it. And he was something different, actually. And he had a few great seasons around about that period of time. And, you know, the physicality coming for crosses and stuff like that. But you know, you used to find 9 times out of 10, they just wanted to get in the dressing room and be finished, apart from a few of the pros like Robbie Earl. So they weren't probably going 100%. So I found it absolutely fine. And it was just an experience, you know.
It's the kind of like banter like in those days. I mean, you know, people always talk about the Wimbledon spirit and stuff. Did you kind of experience that firsthand? Was there any kind of look? Any antics, any crazy stuff that You know, most people don't know about any stories to tell. That's what I'm after.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it would have been kind of the first team in the reserves had their dressing rooms, you know, the setup at Roehampton where we used to train. So not so much in training. I mean, every week after a game, we would have a vote. As you probably heard about the vote at the back of the memorial, and if someone played badly, they'd normally get stripped naked and dragged for a puddle, that kind of thing. But me personally, I had a really bad one, and it's quite a good story. I played really terrible away against Bristol Rovers, and we lost 6-3 in the league. And I might as well not have been there. I had an awful game. I think I was too busy sorting out my curtains and my hair at the time that I was more interested in. And I let in 6 goals that I shouldn't have let in. So obviously we're on the coach on the way back from Bristol, and we have our vote. We'd normally do it on the coach on away games and at the training ground on a Monday. So I've been voted, and obviously there's a consequence to being voted. And I basically got stripped naked and pinned to the back window of the coach for about 4 miles along the motorway. I'm not sure if memory serves me well, but we did get pulled over. If you ever speak to someone like Jason, you'll ask him if we did. But I was just in bits. I was getting, you know, and it wasn't just being pinned. You know, there was a lot of... yeah, a lot going on, but I deserved it. I thoroughly deserved it. And funnily enough, I concentrated in future on away games a bit more.
Really is like survival of the fittest. I mean, you know, if you grew up SW20, I grew up SW19, so, you know, really not a million miles away. And, you know, you were, I don't know, within 5 years or so in age, probably I'm a little bit older. But, you know, that is quite hard school of hard knocks, as I say. But, I mean, as an apprentice, you weren't going to... I mean, Wimbledon didn't pay great money anyway, and they still don't, but you wouldn't have been earning that money, I presume, at this point.
No, I was... well, it was £37 a week we used to get. And what I used to do is I used to coach the School of Excellence kids. So Roger Smith used to bring me down, and I used to earn more money doing that than I would actually from my apprentice wages. And also my mum was, my house was digs for a few of the players here and there. So I had regular people sort of staying with us, and mum used to give me a slice of that. So I kind of had a bit more than all the other guys, luckily.
Really did.
Mate, who was staying with you? Who was staying at your...
Here's a story, and I hope he's not listening, but there was...
Don't worry, mate, no one's listening.
I had a Scottish goalkeeper, Justin, when I was a second year, he was a first year, and he was great. But I had a period of time where I had a guy from Kent called Ian. I won't say his surname. And he was a bit of a nightmare. He used to wind people up regularly. He wasn't everybody's favourite. And he took a bit of a dislike to me, and he stayed at my house, and we didn't get on great. And we were playing against Ipswich in the FA Youth Cup in late 94. And we'd been arguing at the house, and we got to the changing room, and he threw a ball at my face in the dressing room, and we ended up having a full-scale punch-up in the dressing room. And I ended up getting banned for 3 games and, 2 weeks' wages fine. But it's not, and that's very not like me, but we just ended up, you know. So the digs kind of ended after that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a nightmare. And I just need, so you had hands, and then you were, then it was Sully. Is that right?
Yeah.
So how did they compare as keepers? And come on, tell us, who in your eyes, who was the better one?
Well, I thought they were both amazing, both brilliant goalkeepers in their own right. I mean, during my time, Hans was number one. I was just in awe of him because his techniques were second to none, and his kicking was brilliant. He was amazing. And I think probably after I finished at Wimbledon, I think Sully went on to prove he was an amazing goalkeeper, and he's very calm under pressure. You know, he had a bit more height. He probably Hans probably made things look a little better than Neil would, because he wouldn't have so far to spring. But I'd say during my time, I would have said Hans, but on the whole, I'd probably say they're 50-50, really. Both were amazing trainers. They'd be out there every day. I mean, Hans used to take us for personal training sessions with Phil Parks. Do you remember Phil Parks? So we'd go down to Fleet, and this is me jumping in the car with my hero Hans, and he'd drive us down to Fleet, and we would have a session where it'd be me and the Wimbledon goalkeepers plus the QPR goalkeepers, and we'd just be playing keeper wars with each other, and Phil Parks would be teaching us certain things and techniques and mindset stuff and everything, you know. So it was brilliant. We had another goalkeeper at the time who was a pro called Brendan Murphy from Ireland. Do you guys remember him?
I've heard of him. Yeah.
And I've got to hold my hands up. I mean, he was a pro. They brought him over from Ireland, but I just didn't think he was anywhere. And I did start playing for the reserves over him towards the end of my second year. And he actually got taken on for another year, and I got released, and I was quite disappointed because I'd played my last game at Wimbledon was against Tottenham for the reserves. You know, the day they call Judgment Day, when they tell all of you, are you going to get your contract, aren't you? And literally all my pals knew their fate, and I got told to go over to Plough Lane at the time. Even though first team were playing at Selhurst, we were still playing reserve games at Plough Lane. And I played really well against Eric Toulsford up the other end, and came off and was told no. And they took Brendan on. But I was kind of playing above him at the time, which was a surprise. But I think I was prone to some mistakes. So, you know, in an FA Youth Cup run we had, I played really bad in our FA Youth Cup semi-final against United. I had a bit of a stinker. I think I let it get the better of me. But... that's how it went. It was myself, Brendan, Hans, and Sully. But Sully had a broken leg from memory quite a lot of the time during my time there.
So you just name dropped an FA Youth Cup game against Man U, and this would have been what, early 90s, I guess.
Yeah, this was 94.
There must have been some well known Man U players on that team.
Well, funny enough, when I've still got the programme, and obviously do bring up the fact that I played at Old Trafford quite regularly. At work, they actually on my when I call people, it says during the war rather than my name. But so played at Old Trafford against I think really the only big one was Phil Neville. Was playing for them. They had a really, really good youth team, but it was a kind of couple of years after the Beckham and the Scholes era.
Right.
But they were good. I remember playing them and thinking, we lost 2-1 up there. I remember thinking, these guys have got an extra yard to anything I was used to playing against, you know, because we'd play, you know, we were in the Southeast Counties Division 2 with no promotion, no relegation. So we'd be playing kind of Palace would be about as good as it got. I did notice a big difference when we played against United. They just looked like a different level, you know.
People like Neville went on to play for England, then, you know, much as people criticise him for being not as good as his brother, he was clearly, you know, top standard.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, he was, there was even like when we played against Tottenham, they had a guy Quinton Fortune. I remember he ended up signing for United, and we beat West Ham in that FA Youth Cup run. We beat West Ham, and I was looking at the programme the other day, and it was Frank Lampard was playing on West Ham's team. And
who's he?
And these guys, they, you know, there was always sort of good players. You'd normally, you know, like my old college teacher used to tell us, we'd go to college and there'd be us and there'd be Crystal Palace youth team players and there'd be Charlton players, and he'd literally say to us, you do realise that out of you guys, 20 of us, only two or three of you are going to make it. And we all thought we'd be the two or three. Yeah. But in my college class, it was Lee Bowyer and Jason Yule, and Carl Cork was in there as well. So, you know, it is the fact, you know, it's about ability. It's about how much you apply yourself in training, you know, stuff like that. So, but yeah, I met some great names along the way, you know, played against some good players, definitely.
What a fan, mate. It's fantastic. It's great to hear all this. And I just want to ask, because one of the things is that there's still this little hang up on with Hans. I mean, we loved him. He was a great keeper. And did you just think he was just a decent bloke? Because we always, you know, there's always that little thing that was going around with him.
Well, to be fair, I would say kind of Neil Sullivan really had my back as a youth team player. Robbie Earl had our backs. You know, these pros really had our backs. I felt like Hans was... I didn't realise how he was 33 when I was 17, so we're not going to have a mate's relationship.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I think with Sully, he would have seen a bit of myself in himself coming from, I think he was from Sutton and I was from Wimbledon, and we're going down the same path. And he'd really look after me, especially when my shoulder was dislocating on a weekly basis. He really pushed for me to have an operation. I remember he really had my back. But yeah, Hans, I did, you know, as I say, he was always a hero, but I think there was always that gap between us. If I'm the apprentice, he's the hero.
Yeah.
Whereas with Sully, I think, you know, I could have had a beer with Sully, or it was a bit more sort of down to earth, I would say. Hans, great in training, but he was the kind of pro probably where he would come to training and then he's off in his car and he's gone. I didn't get the feeling he would mix and have as much fun with the first team as the likes of, you know, all the other guys, basically. The rest of the team seemed to be more of a unit. But having said that, when I met Hans in the summer, he had an amazing personality. He was we were training at this school, and there was like 215 goalkeepers, I think, and he was cracking jokes. He was laughing. He was doing the Icelandic clap after each session, and I think he was quite professional. Do you know what I mean? A lot of the pros, it was a thing at Wimbledon. As I said at the start, I always felt very much looked after at Wimbledon. And in the dressing room, you would get your likes of Robbie Earl coming in and checking in on you and making sure you're all right and do you need anything, and, you know, actually looking after you. And the same could be said for Sully as well. But that was a thing at Wimbledon, you know. No, it was kind of like, you know, it didn't matter if you're in the youth team. There was no big time Charlies there. You're at the club. You're a player. We're all on the same level, as far as I was concerned.
Except for Fash, surely. I mean, Fash was a big time shot.
Yeah. Again, yeah. You had your superstars. I mean, you guys, I'm sure you would have gone down to the training ground at Roehampton, and there was always a lot of press around. We had gladiators turning up, you know. No, we'd have Wolf turning up at training and things like that. I mean, I'm not sure I'm allowed to tell us. Well, I wasn't actually.
Of course you
there,
are. But come on, Steve. Come on.
So, as I mentioned, I kind of went off to Fleet for my goalkeeper training, and I came back from training and was kind of getting changed in the dressing room, and everyone was telling me about this incident that had happened between Hans and Fash. So you guys all aware of an incident between Hans and not Hans and Fash, excuse me, sorry, Sanchez and Fash.
Sanchez and Fash.
Yeah, Sanchez and Fash.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Hans had driven me off, and we went our goalkeeper training. I come back and the guy said it was one of the worst things they've ever seen when they told me about. I mean, it was the memorial at the back of the training ground, and everyone formed a circle. And, you know, I won't go into detail, but a lot of the guys said it was a little bit much Do you know what I mean? I don't know what you guys know about that incident or what you've heard about it, but the guys in my
trying Frank Sanchez's leg, as far as I remember.
Yeah, that's pretty much the size of it. Yeah. As I say, Fash, I think he was a different beast to most of the pros. I mean, it pretty much went like this. You had your younger pros who were probably really vocal trying to get to the top of the tree. But I used to find your John Scowls, Robbie Earl was amazing to me. I mean, he used to I used to go and do some coaching for a thing him and Steve Allen had. They had a little soccer school called Soccer Skills, and Robbie used to get me to go and do the coaching on that. But he was so down to earth. He'd check in on everyone. He'd often sort of call you out for a bit of extra training after a session. And, you know, there were some good pros there, definitely. There was one I didn't like that I will name and shame, I think.
Yes, come on.
So I hope he doesn't know where I live, though. That's the only thing, because he's a bit of a unit. But we used to line up as Liverpool would from corners, defending corners. So the youth team would basically be lined up, and just so Wimbledon could practice their set pieces, free kicks from outside the box, corners, etc. And obviously the players want to get in. They're getting a bit fed up. It's cold. And I just kept coming and taking these crosses. So shouting keepers coming and plucking these crosses out of the air. And Gary Blissett was playing up front at the time. And I think he was just getting fed up with and didn't want to put it in the session, basically. And I've come and taken a cross, and he's absolutely elbowed me in the temple. And I didn't quite get knocked out, but I remember just thinking that was wrong. It was a bit wrong. Because he wasn't coming up and challenging me for the 5, 6, 7 I'd come and taken before that. But it was just one big elbow in the side of the head. So I didn't have a lot of respect for him. I didn't actually think he was up there at the levels of a lot of the strikers that we'd had before or after either. But he was at the club, and that's what he decided to do that day.
Didn't he get tried to be at the same level as Holdsworth, having come from Brentford, and it never quite worked
exactly
out.
Yeah. I don't know if he meant it, but it was kind of in my head. I felt like, yeah, I've come and took 5, 6 crosses and caught them as well, you know, and it was easy. So he might have been feeling a bit like there's a youth team here embarrassing us a little bit here. So, but that one always sticks in my mind, because the vast majority of the players were just great to us. There was, you know, and that's not me just sort of saying that. They really were. They had a lot of time for us. Because we had the players' lounge at the training ground. We'd be sat in there. There'd be MTV on after training, and we'd just all be sat in there after we'd done our jobs, clean the boots, etc. So, yeah, they were generally really good.
Well, we've all heard about Robbie Earl. Robbie Earl, we just love. We all just love Robbie Earl. He's a hero. He's just constantly here, and he's just cemented that. Loving the fact that he was looking out for people. That's great.
Yeah, he really was. He was definitely, I think he was the best player we've had in my opinion. And I'd been going from 88 up until sort of 95. And then I had a bit of a long break before I started going back to Kingsmeadow. But I think he's in my opinion, the best we've had.
Yeah. So, yeah. Steve, what happened after Wimbledon? What happened next?
Do you know, hand on heart, Robbie had set something up for me to go up to Port Vale, and at the time I had a girlfriend, and I was so devastated. I've got to tell you, it was literally like being hit by a car, especially having played the last few reserve games of the season. Yeah. I was convinced. I mean, while I was playing against Tottenham, Jason Yule was behind my goal telling me there's a tick next to your name. So I was just convinced I was getting this professional contract. And I really went into, I've got to say, a little bit of depression for a few years afterwards. I didn't want to know football, didn't want to talk to anyone about football, didn't want to play football, didn't want to watch football, and suffered a little bit for a few years, and got myself on my feet and just got a day job, you know, normal stuff, and just didn't want to play football anymore. And it was only literally 3 years ago that Jim Lowther, who used to be the sports scientist at Wimbledon, and he used to run the football in the community. Do you guys know of Jim Lowther?
I remember the name, yeah.
So he got me on Facebook, and because I used to do a lot of the football in the community stuff when I played, he saw me on Facebook and he asked if I'd go out to Ireland and do a bit of coaching. So I did it and loved it, and just got back into it over the last 3 years. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was going to watch Wimbledon at King's Meadow because it's always in my heart, but playing wise, I was done. Absolutely done after that. I had a lot of issues with my shoulder, but I kind of like, right, if I'm not going to play in the Premier League, I'm not going to play anywhere. And I didn't have anyone really to tell me any different, you know?
You see, that sounds like a really tough story for you individually. And Nowadays, there are one or two articles that say, you know, look, here's the youth squad of, say, Frank Lampard's era. And Frank Lampard and Joe Cole came through there, and then the other eight or nine didn't. What happened to the other eight or nine?
Yeah.
But what they forget, of course, is that, you know, and no one, of course, then in the 80s and 90s would have talked about any kind of mental health issue without overglossing it. But that's fundamentally what it is. If you're good enough, and none of us ever were good enough at all, but, you know, we like to play football, but just play and knock it around as a five-a-side. But if you know you're almost good enough, and then someone one day tells you you're not, understand. Yeah. Knock you for six.
Yeah, it did knock me for six, and I kind of sulked for many years, basically. But I'm back on top now, you know. The way I look at it as well, you know, if I'd have been a footballer, there's no way I'd have I'd have met my wife and had my daughter, and, you know, had the life I've got. So it's all gone absolutely to plan. And funny enough, the guy Ernie Tippett, who told me the bad news in the dressing room, and I don't think I was ever his favourite goalkeeper. He was a good manager tactically and everything, but I don't think he was a man's man, or he didn't connect with me brilliantly. But I bumped into him three times this year, weirdly, and I hadn't seen him for 30 years. And I've just got this thing where things go around in a circle. It's quite strange, but. I should mention, I saw him at Lenny Piper's testimonial game. You remember Lenny Piper, who had he died last year, so we went and played a testimonial. So, yeah, I was there with Jason Yule and Ian Laidlaw. He had a 1 year pro contract, and it was great. We all played this game. It was against some Vets Champions team, and there was. Anton Ferdinand was playing, Wayne Bridge was playing, Jason, and I actually had a clean sheet. I don't know how I'd done that, but played. And but it was great because we had a few beers after, and myself and Jason got an Uber back and dropped him off at his lovely pad in, I won't say where he lives, but a lovely pad, and realised I'm paying the Uber here. And he's a first team coach at Cambridge. So,
Well, he was until yesterday, at least, anyway.
Oh, do you know what? I've got, actually, has he been sacked?
Well, Gary Monk's been sacked. Whether or not Jason's lost his job, I don't know. Hopefully not. Ooh.
No, I was keeping an eye. I mean, I know he was really excited because when we went on this this game, I think he just got the news he was going to Cambridge, and I think he was really excited. But I was watching the results, and they just haven't happened for him, have they?
I wonder if he'll step up. That would be great. Maybe he's.
I think he's got the ability. He's got the knowledge. He's got the experience. I always thought one day he might be a Wimbledon. Head coach, maybe one day.
You know, he's applied for it at least once.
He went very quiet when I asked him about it, you know.
Well, you would if you'd applied and didn't get it, I suppose, unfortunately.
But no, he's a great guy. He loves his football. But it was quite crazy because we literally had a few beers, and it was like being back in 94 after a few beers. Do you know what I mean? We were all on the same level again. We had Ian down from Newcastle, who's in the police now. It was brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, mate. It sounds amazing. So now back, you came back, you watched this through King's Meadow. You've seen the keepers. So what have you reckoned to our keepers so far? I mean, obviously we'll look at Rambo. was amazing to have in the squad. You really, when you, have you looked at the keepers over the time of you know, since 2002, are there any that have stood out for you particularly?
Well, I really liked Roos. I know we had him on loan, didn't we? But I went to the playoff final, and I just thought he looked like at least the Championship goalkeeper. He just looked like he could probably play in Prem. I've got to say, I think Owen at the moment is looking really good. For me, I don't watch every game because I do work quite a few Saturdays. I try and get to every Tuesday game I can get to. But the clean sheets talk for themselves. I think, you know, as a goalkeeper, you want to keep a clean sheet. And I quite like it. Feels like he's got a good relationship with his back four. And I think that's one of the most important things you can have is the communication and the gaps and knowing when to come, when to stay. And he looks like a good goalkeeper to me. I mean, you know, Seb was a great goalkeeper as well. I thought he did brilliant for us. But a part of the goalkeepers union, and I would never talk ill of any goalkeeper. you know, you go out there, you want to do your best, you make mistakes sometimes. You know, we have had a couple of goalkeepers in the past who have made a few serious errors and are probably playing a league up from where they should be. But currently, I couldn't be happier. I think he looks confident, keeping a lot of clean sheets, great shot stopper. He made a great one-on-one save against Bradford when I was there last. I think he's great. And obviously, Ramsdale, you know what his story is. So, and then Sully came back for a few games, didn't he? And at King's Meadow, I remember going to see that. But yeah, I think actually I don't know him personally, but our goalkeeper coach I think is quite highly respected in the goalkeeper world, because I'm on Instagram a lot, and there's, you know, and people know I'm kind of associated with Wimbledon, and a lot of people say, "Oh, do you know him?" And I don't know him, but I think looking on Instagram and the things he does, I think he seems to be doing a really good job.
Yeah, I've got to ask this one question. So back in 2002. We're starting out again, all right, and we're looking for players.
Yeah.
Did you ever think to step up? Did you ever think I could now play? You know.
Do you know? I wish I had my head screwed on at that period of time, but that was just before I met my wife, and I was pretty all over the place, and I was probably still in a little bit of a in my sulk, but I do think, and I kick myself for wasting my late 20s and my 30s, because, you know, I genuinely think if I'd have gone down to Richardson Evans that day, I think I could have quite easily. I mean, I played, I don't know how I did it, but I managed to talk myself into playing a couple of Legends games over the last couple of years. And I think in about 21, 22, I think I played all right, actually, you know, and I'm nearly 50 now. So I definitely think if I'd have put myself out there, I might have been all right. But I just, at that moment in time, football wasn't at the forefront of my mind. And I'm a bit gutted about it, really.
No. You can't be like that, Steve. It's fantastic. You did what you did. And actually said you've had a great career. You've met some great people, so you can't regret.
Everything happens for a reason, as they say.
100%. And I'm seeing it all come back to me now. It's all, you know, I'm training the AFC Girls Pathway on a Wednesday now. And the strange thing is, it all goes round in a circle. It's at the Bank of England training ground in Roehampton, which is where I got told I was going to be an apprentice. I got told there because we used to train there, and it was a grass pitch at the time, and it was up on the floodlights. It was boggy. It was horrible. It's typical Wimbledon. And now the girls train under these floodlights on a nice sort of AstroTurf pitch, and it's a really nice setup. And I mean, with my goalkeeper training, I do charge, and I charge quite well. But for the girls, I just go and do it because I feel like I've not put much back into Wimbledon apart from buying my tickets, like you guys have. And I got the utmost respect for everything you guys have done. I've been kind of catching up on what you guys have done. But I did think I want to put something back a little bit. So I'm training the girls now, and they're doing amazing. They really are unbelievable, some of the girl goalkeepers. So yeah, that's what I do on a Wednesday night now.
Steve, you've given loads to the club. You are a former Wimbledon player. You're part of our folklore. So, you know, don't sell yourself short on that, my friend.
And he's got a Wopa badge, you know, Women and Old Players Association.
So. I flash that at the bar on a regular basis.
That is pretty.
Does that get you anything if you flash it at the bar? We should steal one.
The same old Wombles badge doesn't, I realise.
But talking about everything happening for a reason, we should probably explain the way that we managed to get Steve on this pod in the first place.
Fantastic. Yeah,
that Bradford game he mentioned, he literally ended up with one of the last random tickets, which happened to be next to where Matt and Adam and the other guys sit. And he was sitting next to me. And within about 2 minutes, it was obvious that this wasn't just some bloke who had an opinion about football. He actually knew what he was talking about. At which point, we all went quite quiet because clearly we don't. We're just mouthy football fans. And then he started talking about, Steve was talking about how Goodman was doing this and Goodman was doing that. And I thought, OK, I'll just shut up now, which is quite rare for me.
Yeah. My wife said to me tonight, do not waffle. But I do waffle a bit. And I was probably chewing your ear off during that game. But
no problem whatsoever. Waffling is exactly what this podcast really should be. Called not same old waffles, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Same old waffle.
I'm just super pleased that Roos was called out as a really great keeper, because I really thought he was fantastic for a long time and felt he never got the praise that he deserved, and I would have liked to have held on to him for longer. So I'm quite happy that again I might have had some football thing right.
I thought we all thought Roos was really good, and then the issue with Roos was that he wasn't ours. And it's like, you know, we had a limited amount of budget that we could spend to buy a goalkeeper at that time. Yeah. So we didn't get the Roos. And it meant ultimately, a little bit further down the line, we end up with Ramsdale. So,
yeah. Yeah. Which was...
He's at Aberdeen. Am I right? Was he at Aberdeen?
No, he was. He was Aberdeen. I think he's back in Holland now.
Oh, yeah. That's right. But no, I agree. I think he was an amazing... And we've been lucky. We've been lucky with a few keepers we've got in recently. I mean, Bass was a good goalkeeper last season. I wish he would stop doing so well this season.
I forgot.
He was brilliant against us, pretty annoyingly, Bass.
And I wonder where Goodman's going to end up next season. I mean, because I think he's on a 5-year deal with Crystal Palace.
Yeah, I don't know if you were at the Saturday's game, Steve, but the fans in the stand, the south stand behind where Goodman is obviously in goal, they've really taken to him. At the midweek game against Crewe, they were like bored because we were 3-0 up with 10 minutes left. So they were going bounce around, Goodman bounce around. So he started bouncing around while the play was at the other end. And on Saturday, you know, he took the plaudits and did the old fist punch up, punch in the air thing. So, I think the fans really are starting to properly think, you know what, if we do go up, maybe Palace could be persuaded that actually his football education would be well served by staying with Wimbledon because they're playing at a higher level.
I think we'd need him if we took the step up, definitely, or we definitely need a good goalkeeper. But he seems to have a good relationship with his back four. I mean, when I used to play, I actually didn't have that many shots to save because I had such a great team around me, and we used to play high as hell. We'd be... You know, I'd be on the edge of my D minimum half the game, you know, and if I had the ball in my hands, I'd be rolling it until I get to near the halfway line, and then I'd be pinging it, aiming for Jason or Cole Court up front. And, you know, it's that thing that we used to play so high that I didn't actually feel like I had much to do. Although, obviously, I would have done, but my memory of it was I just kept these lovely gaps between me and my defenders. And I think, you know, people don't realise that when they're watching goalkeepers, you know. So I would say Ramsdale, unbelievable goalkeeper, unbelievable shot stopper. But I do think sometimes he sits a bit deep, he steps back, he kind of calls it on a little bit. And, you know, the goalkeepers like your Edisons and Allisons are really forceful and pushing everyone out, squeezing everyone out. And there's a bit of the Wimbledon way, actually. You know, we just used to squeeze the game as much as we could back in those days. And that's how we would talk. But you are susceptible to being lobbed. That's the only problem.
Yeah, Sally.
So, Steve, with that in mind, because no one listens to our podcast, I mean, in terms of watching Goodman, because I don't really know what goalkeepers are doing at all, to be honest. It's not something I watch as part of the game. What would you say are areas that he really needs to work on, or that are interesting, or areas that you think that he's super strong on as well?
Well, to be honest with you, I think I've watched him. As I say, I do work quite a lot of Saturdays, so I don't get the opportunity to go to as many games as I'd like. But every single time I've seen him, he's almost been faultless, apart from he made a mistake for the Ipswich goal, but then he ended up turning it around in the penalty shootout. And to get your mindset right after making a mistake in such a big game like that, and actually just, you know. I do quite a lot of work with a guy who's got a thing called the goalkeeper mindset. And I used to struggle with it massively. If I made a mistake, I would want the pitch to eat me up, literally. And, you know, all the time you're worrying about the mistakes you've made, you're not going to be helping your team out. But as I say, I thought that was quite impressive. He did make a mistake. The goal was his fault against Ipswich, and he's gone and turned it around and ended up, you know, saving us in a penalty shootout. So for me, it's a good question, but I literally haven't really seen anything I'd worry too much about. And I think technically he's good. He's very confident, and that's what you want as a goalkeeper. You want the other team to think, you know, I'm not letting in a goal today. That's the idea, clean sheet, you know. But I just hope we can keep hold of him. That's the thing.
The fascinating thing for me is I was at a pre-season barbecue where the players were at, and Goodman was there, and he'd signed a couple of weeks beforehand, but you wouldn't have known he was there. Off the pitch, he's really softly spoken. He's got little John Lennon horn-rimmed glasses, and he bellies his boo to a goose. But I have chatted a little bit with his dad, because his dad knows somebody I know who helps out with programme sales on the match day. So his dad comes to say hello to her, and so we have a chat along the way, and he seems to be, as an individual, he seems to absolutely love it with Wimbledon, and almost going full circle to what you were saying, Steve, he feels like he's being looked after, and the club is taking care of him and making him feel part of the whole group, and that's the mindset as well. And again, from Saturday, for example, it was a tight game. Whoever scored first was going to win, and we got that goal first, but we've kept like 5 clean sheets in a row, I think, at home, I read somewhere.
Yep.
So it really feels right now that the whole group has got a mindset that if they score, they win the game.
Yeah. It's great, isn't it? Because I've suffered like you guys when we first got to Plough Lane. I actually went to watch a lot more games that season when we got relegated. And it's such a different vibe going there when everyone's playing well, and you walk away and you're happy. You know, you're happy anyway because you're at Plough Lane, and it is such a place. It's amazing.
It's a beautiful place. And I just want to get briefly onto the Salford match. I mean, that was just, it was really tight, but I felt we had the better chances, to be honest with you. It kept getting broken up. They were falling over. The ref was blowing up for everything. And there was, Mark, you know this, there was a penalty incident, I thought, that was very similar to the Crew, where we had a penalty and their man got sent off. It looked identical.
It must drive professionals crazy, because it drives us as uneducated fans crazy. But there were two incidents, basically. One against Crew, where Bugle tries to get on the end of a cross. He's hauled down, and the referee judges, A, it's a foul, therefore B, it's a penalty, and C, it's a red card. Almost exactly the same thing happens from almost exactly the same place, because the cross came from close by to where we all sit on Saturday. And it was not only not judged as a penalty, as a foul at all, it certainly therefore wasn't judged as a red card as well. And I genuinely can't see the difference between the two incidents. So either one referee is incompetent in our favour, and the other one is incompetent against us, or I don't quite know what to judge.
I think it's just inconsistency. Inconsistency is what we have for all of the refs we have. They are so inconsistent. I don't understand what training they do or how they do. But yeah, Saturday's ref was terrible. Wound me up something chronic. But
we know how much he wound you up, Adam, because you sit right behind us, and I can, you know, we're very aware how wound up you are. It's but I think the other thing was there a foul for our goal?
No. You just need look. Any team that concedes a goal when the opposition has run from inside their own half,
yeah,
gone past one challenge in inverted commas, will be gutted about that. But actually, they think they only forced Goodman to make one save in the whole 90 minutes. Like Crewe didn't force Goodman to make any saves whatsoever in the whole time. So all that happened was that two players went for the ball. Marcus Brown wanted it more than the other player. End of story.
But when Marcus was there a tug on the Salford player's shirt by Mark? No, okay.
No, we've already discussed this. No, there was no foul.
That's all we need to know. No, it was, yeah, that's right. Anyhow, listen, we deserved it, and Carl Robinson was there, so we all loved him so much. We were showing him such respect. That was hilarious.
And I'd forgotten that. I'd not even thought about.
Who he is?
No, I've not forgotten who he is, but I hadn't thought he was the manager and blah, blah, blah. And of course, someone obviously reminded me. And then I remembered the thing giving him some stick is cool, right? That's fine, whatever. But the thing that does me in every time is that his tactics that he clearly gives out to the team is to roll around, play to the whistle, con the ref, and do loads of stuff. And that happened again. And it's so frustrating. I really hate that style of management, and it's clear that that is a style that he deploys, and it's so stupid.
It's worked for Steve Evans for a whole career, isn't it? So that's probably why he thinks he can get away with it as well.
I'm not sure how much we could talk about this because I can't. I worry about Adam's blood pressure. It's a thing, you know. But even when he sits behind me, I worry about it. But here, I'm just getting a sense his blood pressure's rising. But listen, that's at the moment second, and it got to a point where I genuinely looked at train times up to Fleetwood for tomorrow because I thought maybe
yeah, I got asked pre-match by somebody who goes home and away, and I think he's a bit older than me and therefore was retired.
Yeah,
so he's got the time and obviously the disposable income to go to Fleetwood in the suburbs of Blackpool on a Tuesday night in February. And I thought about it for about 30 seconds, then realised that I do have a day job.
Yeah, exactly. But it's going to be, I mean, and also the thing I'm thinking about is the squad depth. Now, I mean, like this is crazy. I mean, Hippolyte isn't on the bench on Saturday. I mean, you know, and he's not got Fayo. He didn't, you know, just recently signed. He's not on the bench. So Kelly was back. It just seems like incredible.
Before the game on Saturday, there was Biller and James Ball and Callum Maycock and one other, Ryan McLean. And they were doing like just ball drills and fitness tests on the pitch beforehand. So they can't be that far away.
And so what happens when Maycock gets fit?
17.
What happens when Maycock
gets fit?
Or James Ball. I mean, but Maycock was brilliant at the start of the season, you know.
They're all good.
Yeah. So it's something that's going to be. It's going to be really interesting.
This is what I think. You know, before Christmas, we were ticking along, but we had so many injuries, and we were ticking along, still being around the playoffs. The reality is, we're nearly back at full strength. For the first time, when a lot of other clubs aren't having that same luxury.
I think we need to somehow vicariously claim some kind of credit for this because we had Tracy from California on the pod, a month or so ago, and pointed out that basically if she was thinking about having to come back over again for the playoff games or the final, then she'd probably either A, lose a job as a teacher. Hello, Tracy, by the way. Or B, possibly end her own marriage. Neither of which we obviously want to happen at all. And since then, we've gone on this run, unbeaten since mid-December, pending this podcast going out before the Fleetwood game. And yeah, so far so good.
So we're taking credit for this. I'm loving it. We'll take credit for them. Yeah, totally. The other thing about the Salford game is I have never seen so many people on the roof before.
Yeah.
You can clearly get on the roofs, but
They were standing on there was people standing on a section that I'm pretty sure you shouldn't be able to get access to. That was the weird thing. So it's like they weren't on the balconies. They literally were on the main roof bit. And I was, I spent a little bit of time talking to my friend who came to the game. I was like, I don't think you should be able to get into that section. And are they Salford fans or are they random people in those flats that's managed to climb out of their windows? It was very weird. So, yeah. But the best thing was there was obviously for a small part of the game there was a chant about you should have bought a ticket, which is pretty cool. Yeah.
Isn't being a Wimbledon fan all about doing things that you shouldn't do, so to speak, and getting away with it? It was in Steve's day; it probably still is nowadays in 2025.
I know it was great to. I mean, I thought it was hilarious. It was a good game. The other thing that to notice is that there's a new merchandise kiosk, which is in the fan zone. So, now we've got obviously got the club shop, but you can go in. And I've always thought we needed something like that. I thought it might have been in the concourse area, near where we sit. But I think it makes much more sense to have it out in the fan zone. It's great. I'd be interested to know how much money that's made on Saturday because...
Well, it's an extension to the shop, isn't it? So they put that on the match day guide that they were going to add that, and it's an extension to the shop. I didn't see it. I was too, because it was an early kickoff. Ridiculous. I hate Sky, obviously.
And breathe.
No, but it's unbelievable. Like early kickoff, it's ridiculous. Yeah. So I had to rush to get my chips, to get my naked chips, get my beer.
I know.
So annoying. But so I didn't see the inside kiosk.
Beer, that's the main point.
I know.
And I have to say, the last couple of matches, the queues for the food have been crazy.
They've been insane. It's good. I mean, it's a good thing. Anyhow, it's a good thing.
It is a good thing. And Niall, you might know more about this than others. In terms of a good thing, just last week, London Irish were taken out of administration. And there was talk, was there not, of a possible ground share?
Massively so. So, kind of going back, if I was on the Don's Trust board, everything I'm saying now, I should never have been able to say or ever repeat that sort of stuff, right? But there was advanced.
Is there not a secret? Is there a disclosure? Do we have to bleep this bit? Do we have to?
Oh, Adam? Not again.
I don't think we will. they're probably technically a reformed club, right? Or whatever. They're bought out and all the rest of it. But there was a really strong talks going on between us and London Irish that would have seen London Irish come into the club and basically lift the capacity of the ground. So they would have built more stuff because they need the ground to be over 10,000. So we would have had another stand. And it was looking at basically being what my memory of it, and I think it was the East Stand, that they were going to try and replicate what the West Stand looked like. So that would have brought our capacity up significantly, and it would have been London Irish coming in. The deal, though, was that all the branding would still have stayed at Wimbledon. So the colours would have still been blue, wouldn't have gone green, and all the rest of it. But it would have been London Irish's permanent home. And that's what that looks like. So that talk, obviously, is interesting. London Irish have got ambitions about getting back into the Premiership, which is where you need to have a capacity of over 10,000 supporters. And that needs to be, and they want to stay in that side of London, right? So there are not an awful lot of options. Rugby union is not allowed to be played on a Premier League ground. That's forbidden by the Premier League. So they can't play at Brentford or Chelsea or Fulham or whatever, because they'll always have that ambition about being in the Premier League. We're obviously, quite a few years off being in the Premier League. So that makes us a very suitable candidate for London Irish to look to play their home games.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. I heard they wanted to not do the Championship now. They want to go to this other league, which is sort of like a league with Scottish teams and Irish teams. There's a
I think that's got the same rule about the 10,000 capacity.
Yeah.
So that's where it's going to be interesting. I mean, if you're looking at London Irish, if they want to stay in that area and they're looking for a stadium, and they can't play in a Premier League stadium, then your options become quite limited very quickly.
Awesome. All right. Okay. Well, lads, we've done our time, and it's been fantastic. Steve, thank you very, very much. But before we go, we were alerted today of some really sad news of the passing of Tom Adam, who was on one of the first boards. I think he joined the DTB in 2004 from he was chair in actual fact from 2004 to 2007. And he also led on the stadium working group. And, you know, thanks to his effort and many others, obviously, we now have Plough Lane. He was a lovely man. Niall, I think you knew him as well.
Yeah, I was lucky to serve on the board with Tom. And Tom was very committed towards fan ownership. And I'll just say one memory I have of working with Tom. It was like very, very soon after I got elected on, is that we went and had like a little, the board all kind of had a brainstorming session. And it was at the hotel on Wimbledon Common where the 88 team had met. And we weren't staying. We were just in some like lobby, some room downstairs. And it was all about what do we put down as our targets? You know, this is 2004 or whatever. And, you know, we were kind of throwing random ideas up and all the rest of it. And it's that brainstorm that Tom Adam organised that came through with the target that we, as a club, as our mission, as our aim, was to be a football league, turn to football league within 10 years. And that was under Tom Adam and his chair, and that brainstorm that became an official target of the club. And obviously Tom was completely gutted that we missed it, because as we all know, we did it in 9. But that for me is like, you know, that's Tom.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Well, sadly missed. He did a load of work. But thank you all very much today. Thank you so much, Mon Frère, Niall Cooper, producer Adam Proctor. Keep taking the blood pressure tablets. To the wonderful expert, Mark Lewis. Mark, we are going to, at some point soon, we're going to go through proper stats, because you've been sending us stats through. It's brilliant. We've got to get you on those stats to analyse our games.
Much rather listen to Steve and all his anecdotes tonight. Yeah.
And and then thank you so much, Steve. It has been amazing. Thank you for all those wonderful stories. It's brilliant, mate. And we're so pleased to have you back at Plough Lane. It's great.
Oh, no, I'm loving it. And I really appreciate it, guys. And keep up the brilliant work. I'm loving it. It's brilliant. So I'll see you all soon, yeah?
Yeah, come see us and stand again. Bye. Yeah. Good man.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much.
See ya.
Right. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, everybody.
We are the same old Wombles. We're back.